From the National Radio Club, this is the DX Audio Service.
Welcome back to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for October 2009. From John Tootenham, he writes, the annual Midwest DXers get-together will be held in Springfield, Missouri at the Budget Inn, located on State Route 65, about a half mile south of I-44. If you'd like some more information on this get-together, contact John at 417-624-8058 or call him on his cell phone at 417-438-4749. Now it's time for our musings to the members.
Hey, Fred and everybody out there. This is TJ the DJ from Sycamore, Illinois. Hey, that was a cool WTLD sign-off and sign-off jingle. That's a classic jingle. I really like that. I would like to know the bed that was used on that sign-off. What was the name of that record? I remember it as a top 40 hit back in 1958 when WJJD played it. Could anyone tell me the name of that record? Thanks a lot.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, I've just returned from the National Radio Club's convention in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and it was wonderful to be with fellow members and have the camaraderie of being able to discuss radio that we enjoy and so on and so forth. The weather was perfect and I did well on the DX quiz, although my friend George Green from Akron won it. But I'll be back to battle next year, be it Rochester, New York or Madison, Wisconsin, wherever it may be. Sorry to hear that Ernie Harwell is dying of incurable cancer. I feel terrible to hear that. I've known Ernie for a long time. He's been a wonderful friend to me. Our local station, CKPC 1380 AM and 92.1 FM, the sale has finally been approved to Evanoff Communications Incorporated of Toronto. And I heard a station while we were in Allentown on 1350 that was playing Christmas music, and that probably meant that they were about to make a change of format, such as 820 CHAM did up here in Hamilton last year. So thank you again, everybody, for a wonderful time at the convention, and I'm looking forward to next year.
Oh, this is Mark Marino from Crystal Lake, Illinois. I just had a suggestion. I wondered if maybe Mark Durenberger or John Bowker can do an article on, or a series maybe, on the history of the hourly time tone on radio stations. I can only think of, well, one big station in Chicago anymore that has one, and that's WGN. But of course, growing up, I remember when they were quite common. And maybe they could talk about, you know, how they got started and how they worked. As I recall, they're out at the on the transmitter. They're not always in the studio. Of course, except when WLS had one for a while and it was on tape. And of course, it was never at the, quite the right time. But I thought it might be interesting to do a series and maybe play some of those on the hour IDs that might be around with the hourly time tone on them, because I know all the networks used to have an hourly tone as well.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville, Alabama, answering Josh Owen's question about the Beacon in Tennessee. The actual frequency is 529 kilohertz. The call is LYQ. It's at the Manchester, Tennessee private airport. That beacon is owned by Dave Franz, who is the owner of shortwave station WWRB. Fred and Mark, I really appreciated the article on FM translators for AM stations, but I'd still like to know, what is the maximum and the minimum power that these translators might run, if you happen to know?
Hi, my name is Mike Lance. I just came from the National Radio Club convention. It was an interesting convention. Unfortunately, not as good as the other conventions. But anyway, I enjoyed seeing Wayne Ryan and John German and all of the other members there. I missed you, Fred, and Phil Wayne, and everybody else that usually goes to the convention. Now, in radio, I noticed that there was a station in Pennsylvania that was playing good music, but they kept saying, give us a call if you want to do a talk show, if you want to buy time. Is radio hurting that badly, do you think? and why are they dropping music on AM? It's really sad. I listen to WARM in Scranton, Pennsylvania. They were playing some of their old jingles, but what they were doing is they were not really in sync with the True Oldies channel. Where does the True Oldies channel come from? And do you see AM radio getting better again? They should do old-time radio, or maybe more oldies from the 60s. I just wanted to let you know that I will be getting my guide dog October 26th. I have been accepted at Guide Dog Foundation. Go October 26th till November 20th. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Hi, Fred from the DX Audio Service. This is Wayne Heinen, chairman of the Board of Directors of National Radio Club. Just wanted to clarify something from last month's issue, and that is that Paul Swearingen is not actually absolutely stepping down as the editor of DX News on May 2010. He had indicated a retirement date of May 2010. Turned out that was his retirement date from teaching in the Topeka system. He's since modified that, and he's already retired after they changed his job description. But there was a little mistake here at HQ, and I didn't get a chance to get a updated copy off to Fred before the last deadline. So anyway, I thought I'd clarify that. See y'all later. Bye-bye.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you'd like to muse, just give us a call at area code 646-402-5685. And when prompted, just enter 62544. That's 62544. And you can then muse. Let's go right to Tim Hendel's question concerning translators, because that's a rather mysterious subject, as well as somewhat despised. And I say that only because some people don't think that a lot of these translators should be around. The original definition of a translator was to fill in coverage for a FM station, and along the way, the rules got changed. As you know, Tim, if you had a station in Huntsville that had reception problems, say, 60 miles away, you could put down a translator to supplement the signal in a certain area or such. But the rules got bent a little bit, and now you have basically what we call in the business satellators, which they're just basically, instead of picking up a station and relaying it, they're actually relaying a satellite-fed signal. So, you know, in some cases, it's, I don't know, to me it's not the right thing to do, but somebody passed a law and made it work, so I guess that's what we have to live with. Now, these FM translators also now may be used for cross-band translation, as you've heard Bill Hale talk about, and this removes now the restriction that prevented FM translators from retransmitting AM signals. Now, no translator or booster may transmit anything other than a live simulcast of the licensed parent station, that is, except for emergency warnings such as EAS, and a 30-second per hour of fundraising. That's kind of an interesting portion of the rule. Also, the parent station must identify all the translators and boosters between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m., between 12:55 and 1:05, and between 4 and 6 p.m. each broadcast day, or it must be equipped with its own automatic device, either audio or FSK, for hourly identification. So keep that in mind when you're listening to one of these stations. Maximum power is 250 watts ERP for each translator and 20% of the parent station's power for a booster. Now, there is no limit on the height for these fill-in translators, those that exist within the primary service contour of a primary station. A translator or booster must go off the air if the parent station's signal is lost. That helps prevent unauthorized retransmission of another station, for example. And translators typically have nothing to do with LPFM, so keep that in mind. Mark, I don't know how we could do an article about time tones, because to do such an article, we'd have to locate all these different recordings that have these time tones. So maybe you know somebody who's got some. We can get them all put together. I've got just a few, but not enough to really make an article, so we might have to pass on something like that. Mike, the Oldies Channel is a syndicated music format service which is provided over the satellite to a radio station. If you'd like to contact the Oldies station, here's their information. It's the Oldies Channel, or you can find them at oldieschannel.com. Post Office Box 1234, that's Post Office Box 1234, Bedford, Indiana, and their zip code is 47421. Or you can give them a call at, area code 877-HITS-365. That's 877-448-7365. And Mike, to answer your question concerning music on AM and oldies in specific, that's kind of an interesting quandary, because it's not a technology issue. It's more of a content issue, which is based on the people that own radio stations. And sadly, people that own stations are investors and bankers and not broadcast people. And I think it's hurt radio in a lot of cases. For example, myself, I can tune around the AM and FM dial here in Lima, Ohio, and not hear anything that I really want to listen to. So I have to have my own little radio station, you know, WNRC, playing into a 50 milliwatt transmitter so I can listen to oldies music here at home. But there is nothing on the air as far as oldies music that I want to listen to. No local news, weather, and sports. I get all my news from TV. And this has kind of transcended down into the young people. My son is 16 years old, and I've never seen him listen to a radio. If he wants to listen to music, he listens to iPods or files that he has shared with some of his friends. But radio is not in his life. Same with my daughter. So I think radio has lost its soul, so to speak. Maybe one day they'll wake up, Mike. Who knows? Who knows? Now for TJ the DJ. What was the name of that song? I bet that's really racking your brain. So let me tease you a little bit more. This group had a song which was a takeoff after this commercial.
In the valley of the Jolly.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
Green Giant.
Well, actually, after the character in the commercial, the song went something like this.
In the valley of the Jolly.
Ho, ho, ho.
Wow!
And it was the same group that had this number one hit. And if you haven't guessed it as of yet, Tom, that's the Kingsmen. And the song that you're thinking about that was used on that WTOD sign-off was called Weekend, and it was the number 258th song of 1958. The Kingsmen got together in Portland, Oregon in 1957, and they broke up back in 1968. Just two hits that I know of, Louie Louie and the Jolly Green Giant. One last thing for the musings to the members, and that is from the chairman of the board, Wayne Heinen. He writes, I'm very pleased to announce that Ernie Wesolowski has accepted the position of the National Radio Club's convention planner. As many of you know, Ernie is no stranger to convention goers, as he's attended many of the conventions over the years, and he's acted as convention host in Omaha in the past. Ernie's going to be handling all the convention communications for the board of directors and assisting convention bidders and hosts in planning and setting up their conventions. You may contact Ernie via email at neerniew@hotmail.com, or you can write to him at the following address, 13312 Westwood Lane, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144-3543. Turning our attention from radio over to television, we have an article from the Associated Press, September 18, 2009, titled, Weak Signals, Problems Linger with Digital TV Switch. Think the digital television transition is over? Well, not quite. Many viewers have found that they can't pick up certain stations after the switch, even with the right TVs or converter boxes. The stations are still trying to figure out ways to help them tune in. The main problem is that when the last major TV stations turned off their analog TV transmitters on June 12th to broadcast entirely in digital, some of them moved their digital signals from the UHF frequencies, that is channels 14 to 69, to VHF channels, channels 2 to 13. To most viewers, these channels are just different numbers on the remote, but as signals on the airwaves, they have different characteristics. VHF hasn't been used much for digital signals, and there were indications that there would be problems with the switch, partly because viewers had inadequate indoor antennas. Still, the switch went ahead. Since then, at least 20 VHF stations have asked the Federal Communications Commission to move their digital signals back to UHF, and more would like to do so. However, the government has sold off some of the UHF band to cell phone carriers, leaving less space for TV stations. Another portion is planned to be used for emergency services, which is another reason for the digital TV transition. Philadelphia's ABC affiliate, WPVI, switched its digital signal to Channel 6 on June 12th and got thousands of calls per day from viewers who couldn't find the station on their TV set anymore. Within a week, WPVI got emergency permission from the Federal Communications Commission to quadruple its transmitter power output. It could do that because the closest station that also uses Channel 6 is in Binghamton, New York, who wanted to increase its power, which meant it would be overwhelmed by the stronger signal from Philly. But in other cases, increasing power is a complicated proposition involving several stations. More than 50 VHF stations have applied to increase their signal power. The power increase helped WPVI punch through to a lot of viewers, but the station still gets calls every day. Hank Volpe, director of engineering at WPVI, says that he understands the loss of the station's UHF slot, but says, quote, "I would have loved to have a UHF channel to play with," unquote. Mark Colombo, a TV enthusiast and electrical engineer student who maintains an online database of the country's TV stations, says, "Everyone who had any sense knew that broadcasting digitally on Channel 6 or lower would yield terrible reception. Those channels are susceptible to interference from household electronics, spark plugs in nearby passing cars, and distant thunderstorms." What is more surprising was that Channel 7 to 13 also had problems. Though there have been some clues it would happen there too, WVUE in New Orleans, a Fox station, turned off its analog signal last December before most other stations did and moved to digital Channel 8. The reaction was immediate. Quote, "We fielded thousands of phone calls," said Al Damaschek, WVUE's director of engineering. "We did everything we could. We talked to the people on the phone. We sent technicians out to people's houses. We brought in antennas to play with at people's houses. We kept beating our heads against the wall for months." In June, the station started simulcasting on UHF, which mollified most viewers. WVUE's experience was repeated more than 6 months later when Chicago's ABC station, WLS, tried to move its digital signal to Channel 7. It says it got nearly 7,000 calls from viewers about reception problems in a week after the transition. Nearly half of the homes visited by the FCC and WLS's service area in late June had inadequate indoor reception. WLS tried doubling its output power, but it still wasn't enough. Now the FCC is letting it move to a UHF channel, Channel 44. TV consultant Peter Putman said a lot of the reception problems for digital VHF stations can be attributed to the fact that VHF antennas need to be larger. The long rods on an outdoor antenna are for VHF reception, and it's difficult to make these a compact indoor antenna with good VHF performance. TV watchers with indoor antennas had the same problem with VHF stations when they were analog, but often they just suffered through it. They would get a poor, snowy picture and decent sound, and considered that, well, good enough. But because digital is a all-or-nothing technology, the weak signal that they get on digital isn't strong enough to produce a picture at all. Some TV viewers simply have the wrong antenna. For years, HD TV antennas were sold that they brought in only UHF. Andy Couch, a web developer in Austin, Texas, installed one of these antennas in his attic and was happy with it until this summer. That's when the local Fox station, KTBC, disappeared from his set. It had moved its digital signal from UHF to VHF. Now he says, quote, "Now I have to get a VHF antenna just for one channel. No thanks," he says. Another problem is that FM radio stations can interfere with VHF TV stations. Volpe at WPVI in Philadelphia said FM interference is easily dealt with by installing a FM filter or an FM trap on the antenna. Analog TV manufacturers incorporated such filters in their sets. However, digital televisions and converter boxes lack these filters, since they do nothing to improve digital reception on UHF, where digital signals have mainly been until this year's transition. FCC spokeswoman Janice Weiss noted that relatively few stations out of the more than 1,800 in the country have reported reception problems after the transition, and said that the agency is working closely with them to resolve those problems. Quote, "People are figuring out there's someone out there to blame for this," said Volpe. "Well, there's nobody to blame," unquote. But the nature of the digital TV transition, with nearly all major city stations turning off on the same day as mandated by Congress, didn't make it easy to identify and deal with the reception issues. Columbo, the TV enthusiast, points out that in Wilmington, North Carolina, where the Federal Communications Commission encouraged TV stations to shut down last September as a test for the big day, all the digital TV stations used UHF. And the area also lacks large hills that can block signals. Quote, "It was basically the ideal market," unquote, he said. Quote, "You could not ask for an easier market to deal with than Wilmington," unquote. And just a final note to this article on a personal nature. As many of you know, I work for a digital TV station, or stations, plural, as we have one high-power digital station on Channel 8 and one low-power digital station on UHF. That's Channel 35, by the way. And what we have noted is that the antenna issue at the home is very critical. If a viewer is using a pair of rabbit ears or a pancake antenna or if they're using those halo antennas that fit on the top of the satellite dishes, they tend to not get signals worth a darn. In fact, we have people 3 miles from the transmitter that can't get us. And it's basically an issue due to multipath and the efficiency of the antenna. In just about every case where somebody has a traditional Yagi antenna for VHF or a screen or parabolic antenna for UHF, they get digital signals just fine. As I said earlier, I haven't been listening to a lot of AM or FM radio lately, but what I have found is a renewed interest in shortwave radio. This is not the same as ham radio, but international shortwave broadcasters and amateur radio station operators do share some of the spectrum. Along with the excitement of hearing another country, you'll hear language lessons, news, especially world news, and views from different viewpoints, different than what you hear on Fox, CNN, or traditional talk radio. A posting in Usenet by radio enthusiast Kevin Cray sparked my interest, and for those of you that have access to shortwave radios, I hope some of these tips help. According to Kevin, you can listen for Asia and Australian stations in the morning and listen for Europe at night. He also says no shortwave station operates 24 hours a day. You may not hear anything unless you're listening at the right time, or you may hear another language, or you may hear some other country that's sharing that frequency. Many countries are better heard in non-English broadcasts. Explore the dial and you'll hear many fascinating things, including exotic music. So, what might you hear? Have you heard Alaska? No, that's not a country, but many people have not heard Alaska on AM or FM. So, you can pick up an Alaskan station on the frequencies of 6150, 6950, 6355, or 9920. Those, by the way, are in kilohertz. Australia has transmitters on 5025, 5995, 6020, 6080, 6240, 9475, 9560, 9580, 9590, and 9660. Canada's RCI, or Radio Canada International, operates on the frequencies of 9610, 9755, 9770, 13650, 15365, and 17740. Although the upper frequencies tend to be poor because the maximum usable frequency is not that good. Cuba has some huge signals on 6000, 6060, 6180, 6300, 9505, 9550, and 11760. Israel broadcasts on 6280, 6985, 7545, 9345, 15640, 15760, 17535, and 17600. The Netherlands broadcasts on frequencies such as 6020, 6040, 6165, 7120, 9345, 9795, 9895, 11655, and 11675. AFRTS, or the American Forces Radio Television Service, transmits in upper sideband. USB, as it's called, is a mode like AM except the carrier is suppressed, and the user's radio must inject a carrier to decode the transmission. This is done using a BFO. AFRTS transmits on the following frequencies: 4319, 5446.5, 5765, 6350, 7811.5, 10320, 12133.5, 12759, and 13362. The United States government also broadcasts on shortwave as the Voice of America. The VOA's transmitters are on the following frequencies of 5960, 6080, 6105, 6110, 7125, 7175, 7205, 7405, 9645, 9760, 9785, 9885, 11655, 11885, 11890, 11975, and 12015, and 12150. This station is an extension of the United States government, but it does have some interesting programs. Oh, by the way, there is Al Weiner's WBCQ. Al used to be a pirate operator and now went legit. His station, WBCQ, is out of the state of Maine, and it transmits on 5110 in lower sideband, 7415, 9330 lower sideband, and 18910 lower sideband. There are also numerous privately owned shortwave radio stations, and they include KAIJ, WEWN, WRMI, and WWCR, just to name a few. Pirate radio stations can be heard also on shortwave in the frequencies of 6925 to 6975. Most are in AM, but some are in upper sideband. If you have a shortwave radio, why not tune it on and report what you hear? If you've not played with shortwave, perhaps this just might be a new adventure. Let us know what you hear. Are you ready for a contest? Well, we certainly hope so, because Wayne Heinen is contest manager, and he's got two National Radio Club 2009-2010 DX season contests. Now, these are contests that every National Radio Club DX Audio Service member can enter. Believe me, anybody can do it. So I'd like to really see some DX Audio Service members put some effort into participating in some of these contests. Are you ready? Now, there's two contests. One's called the Cumulative Logging Contest. The other's called How Far Can You Go? Let's do contest number one first, the Cumulative Logging Contest. You get 1 point for every clear channel station that you hear. You get 2 points for every expanded band radio station you hear. You get 3 points for every regional station you hear. And you get 5 points for every graveyard channel station that you hear. Entries are limited to stations in North America and include the United States, Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean. Stations on any split frequency will be considered as clear channels, and those clear channels are 530, 540, 640, 650, 660, 670, 680, 690, 700, 710, 720, 730, 740, 750, 760, 770, 780, 800, 810, 820, 830, 840, 850, 860, 870, 880, 900, 940, 990, 1000, 1010, 1020, 1030, 1040, 1050, 1060, 1070, 1080, 1090, 1100, 1110, 1120, 1130, 1140, 1160, 1170, 1180, 1190, 1200, 1210, 1220, 1500, 1510, 1520, 1530, 1540, 1550, 1560, 1570, and 1580. Expanded band stations are on 1610, 1620, 1630, 1640, 1650, 1660, 1670, 1680, 1690, and 1700. Regional channels are 550, 560, 570, 580, 590, 600, 610, 620, 630, 790, 910, 920, 930, 950, 960, 970, 980, 1150, 1250, 1260, 1270, 1280, 1290, 1300, 1310, 1320, 1330, 1350, 1360, 1370, 1380, 1390, 1410, 1420, 1430, 1440, 1460, 1470, 1480, 1590, and 1600. The graveyard channels are the local channels of 1230, 1240, 1340, 1400, 1450, and 1490. The leader with the most points as of 11:59 p.m. Eastern Local Time on December 31st, 2009 will receive a 2010 WRTH handbook. The entrant with the most points as of 11:59 p.m. Eastern Local Time May 31st, 2010 will receive a one-year membership extension to the National Radio Club. Contest number two is called How Far Can You Go? This will be a cumulative mileage of all the loggings you made during the contest period. All stations anywhere in the standard broadcast band are eligible. This contest should be a real shooting match from both coasts for those of you that like International Transatlantic and Trans-Pacific DX. Your latitude and longitude as submitted by you or determined using DeLorme Maps 2009 will be used. The best distances will be posted at the contest midpoint, midnight Eastern Local Time, December 31st, 2009, and at the end on 11:59 p.m. Eastern Local Time, May 31st, 2010. This contest will have two prizes. A 2010 WRTH will be awarded to the entrant that has the most points at the midpoint and a one-year National Radio Club membership subscription extension to the entrant with the most points at the end. Here's the general rules for all the contests. Contest eligibility. All National Radio Club members, that is DX News, EDXN, or DX Audio Service, may apply as long as they remain members. You may enter either one or both contests. The contest dates run from midnight Eastern Local Time, October 1st, 2009, through 11:59 p.m. Eastern Local Time, May 31st, 2010. Location changes. All stations must be logged within 25 miles of your established QTH. Log criteria. You must hear the station's call letters or a universally recognized station slogan may be submitted for non-U.S. stations that are more prone to use these than any assigned call letters. Reporting criteria should be submitted in column form. Both contests' logs shall contain frequency, call sign or slogan, city, state or province, country, date, and local time heard. All points and mileage will be calculated by the contest manager. All entries must arrive at the contest manager's address by the 5th of the month following the reporting period. October logs are due by November the 5th. All late entries will be discarded. All contest standings will be updated and posted in DX News around the middle of the month, beginning in November. You may enter at any reporting time. Reporting location. Email submissions are encouraged. Please email them in Word or Word Perfect or any other word processor format. Excel or an acceptable spreadsheet format can be sent to AM Radio Log. That's AMRADIOLOG at NRCDXAS.org. You can also submit via postal service, and that is the contest manager at 4131 South Andes, Andes Way, Aurora, Colorado, 80013-3831. The contest manager will make the final decision as to the eligibility of all entrants and entries. Rules may be added, amended, or clarified by the contest manager as required to ensure a fair contest. The contest manager is not eligible to receive any prizes or awards in any of the contests. So there you go, DX Audio Service members, something to strive for. I hope to see several of you in the organization. Put a contest entry in, and who knows, you might be fighting me for first place. This next article has very little to do with radio. It's just a neat article, and I thought I would read it for you. And I think guys like Wayne Ryan will especially like this. This appeared in the sports section of the Toledo Blade newspaper, and it's written by Dave Hackenberg. It's titled, Listeners Knew Harwell Wouldn't Let Them Down. This is a recycled story, but the best ones usually are. Years and years ago, as a little kid, I'd go with my parents up to the cottage way up in northern Michigan on Lake Leelanau, and there was no TV there, which nobody seemed to mind, especially at night when the transistor radio, snapping and crackling with static, took us into the radio booth at Tiger Stadium, to the man with the rich yet soft Georgia drawl, to the most comforting voice ever, to the greatest announcer ever. Listen to Ernie Harwell, my daddy said one cool night when we were huddled around the campfire, and you'll wonder why they ever bothered to invent television. Nothing I could write here can top that line. Harwell, 91 years old, almost 7 years removed from his final broadcast and still one of the most recognized and most beloved men in Michigan, was at Comerica Park last Wednesday to thank the Tigers and the fans. He has inoperable cancer, and this was likely the start and finish of his farewell tour. And it struck me that the wrong person was saying thank you. If you never had the good fortune of meeting the man, and ever wondered if he could be possibly as humble and sweet and accommodating and modest and gentle and genuine, the answer is simply yes. His greatness has always been his goodness to everyone around him. He was the one guy up on that pedestal who never let you down. For decades, Ernie Harwell showed us how to live, and now he'll show us all how to die, quietly, with dignity, with only peace and without fear or sadness, accepting the next step on what he called a great journey. We can only celebrate that we were along for so much of that ride. And that was the article by Dave Hackenberg that appeared in the Toledo Blade newspaper. Can too much RF, too much signal, get you in trouble? Well, yes it can. An agent from the FCC's New York office, driving a direction-finding vehicle in November of 2006, found that WYGG-FM was operating from an antenna 30 meters too high, mounted on a building roof 83 meters west of the station's authorized location. Scaling the roof required the agent to unlock a padlocked door, traverse a poorly illuminated elevator equipment room, and scale a ladder to the upper level of the roof. The agent observed WYGG's transmitting antenna approximately 8 feet above the upper roof level, mounted on a pole approximately 3 feet away from the top of the ladder, and flanked by a stack of cellular antennas mounted on the side wall and 8 thick cables laid across the upper roof within several feet of the antenna. Using a personal RF safety monitor, the agent determined that there was rooftop areas that met or exceeded the general population RFR limits. There were no warning signs or barriers on the rooftop to prevent access to the area. When the agents from the New York and Philadelphia office returned a few days later to confirm the readings, they found two small, vague, inconspicuous signs near the rooftop door, neither of which were clearly visible because the elevator room was not fully illuminated and because the smaller of the two signs was hidden by a large piece of electrical equipment. On the roof, the RFR level was 58% above the maximum range. So, what happened? The station scored a $25,000 fine. Better luck next time, guys. And that puts an end to the DX Audio Service for October 2009. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.